We are continuing today with the question of prayer leadership. Saw last week we talked about Torah reading. What does it mean to read Torah or to take an aliyah halachically? What's going on when someone does that? And crucially, we saw that it's actually not at all clear what is going on when we're reading Torah. We got into language that we've seen before when talking about, is there an obligation or not to daven with a minyan? We got into this language of chovas hatzibor and chovas hayachid, individual obligations like tefillin that each and every one of us, or each and every one, depending on your gender, depending on your point of view, topic for a different VBM class. So each and every one of us is obligated to fulfill. And we also saw a communal obligation where there's no individual obligation on Catherine and David and Yehudit each to do the thing, but their community must do that thing. And that was language that seemed best to express what's going on with Torah reading, though that was not a consensus view, it was a strong majority view. A lot of those same ideas are going to come up again today. We're going to spend today looking at the question of prayer leadership. We've already talked about obligation in davening and see there's no gender gap with regard to obligation to daven or to daven with a minyan, or at least no reason to assume a gender gap with regard to obligation to daven with a minyan. And so all that's left to think about is, well, what are the other things where there might be a place where the shliach tzibur, where the prayer leader, is dispensing obligations for others? And we're going to be focusing on things like Baruch Hu, Kedusha, and Kaddish, which get called in the literature Dvarim Shebikdusha, literally things that are in holiness or things that are of holiness. I'll say it one more time to make sure we all have it. Dvarim Shebikdusha. Hopefully I can now just use that phrase going forward and you'll know when you hear that that's what I'm talking about. As we'll see this week, and truth be told, continuing our final two classes, a little bit unclear what it is that actually makes these things Dvarim Shebikdusha. But what is clear is that these are things that require a minyan and that are done in some way responsibly, or at least most of them are done responsibly as part of the service. And we're going to begin with a text that we saw last week, because this text talks about both Torah reading and about things having to do with prayer leadership. So, source number one, the Mishnah in Megillah. Katan korah b'Torah u'mitargem. So a minor, as we saw last week, may read from the Torah and may do the halachically significant translation of the Torah into Aramaic. Aval, eino pores ha-shma, but the minor may not, we have here is lead the responsive reading of the Shema. I'll come back to that phrase in a moment. Ve'eino over lifnei ha-teva, and the minor may not literally pass before the ark, which means to lead davening and specifically to recite the Amidah, the repetition of the Amidah. Ve'eino nosei es-kapav, and the minor does not do the priestly blessing, and then a whole host of other things as well. Okay, so I will quickly say about pores ha-shma, just to get this out of the way. Because it's going to be a phrase that comes up again and again. We're thinking sort of historically, if we're being, you know, sort of critical in our understanding of texts, to answer the question, what is Ores al Shema? The answer is, we don't know. There's a whole history in the last century and a half of scholars who've tried to figure out what this term means, and there's disagreement about it. It seems to be some kind of responsive recitation of the Shema that we don't do anymore. With regard to how this is understood traditionally, there's ambiguity there as well. What does this phrase mean? But fundamentally, it refers to a sort of repeating, the way it's understood traditionally, which is possible, but probably not what it meant in its original sense. Some kind of repetition of Baruch Hu at the end of davening for folks who did not hear Baruch Hu, folks who weren't there when we said Baruch Hu, to do a Baruch Hu at the end. That's how this is one of the ways it's often understood. Crucial for our purpose is that it doesn't really affect things, right? It's either something that we don't do anymore or something that's no different from the other parts of davening that we'll be talking about. So we're going to leave Pores al Shema to the side, and we'll be focusing on this question of, well, why may a minor not pass before the ark, lead the davening, recite the Amidah for others? So the question becomes, why would you say that someone could or could not lead davening? The minor, of course, is a more complicated case than the case of a woman, because the minor is not, well, we'll see, we'll talk more about this in a little bit, but is not obviously obligated in prayer, at least not in the same way as we've spoken about before. Minors are only ever obligated mishum chinuch, because of education, which seems to be a fundamentally different kind of obligation from saying that someone actually has to do that obligation, even if it's only rabbinic, but not, you know, where it's not about education, but actually about doing that thing. So we'll see a couple different approaches to what is going on when we say Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu, these things that we refer to as Dvarim Shebik Dusha. So the first source we look at here, source number two, Machzor Vitri. This is, as its name implies, basically a sidur, but one with extensive commentary, so much so that it really functions more as a medieval halachic work rather than a sidur. You would not want to daven out of the sidur, it'd be too bulky. And this Siddur comes out of the Beit Midrash of Rashi. So it's not written by Rashi, but as we will see right away, it regularly references his opinions and his rulings. And it is generally considered a reliable resource for understanding what Rashi thought about any number of halachic topics. So source number two, Al Asa Rashi's Palalu Kulo, V'shama Kedusha Ubarachu V'seder Tefila. So we're talking about 10 folks who've already davened. They're done. They've done all the davening. They didn't, but they didn't hear Kedusha and Barachu and the Seder at Tefila, which probably refers here to the repetition of the Amida. So we've got 10 people. They've all fulfilled their individual obligations to daven. What have they not done? That's stuff they can only do with a minyan, Kaddish, Kedusha, and Barachu. So what does Machzor Vidri say about this? Sheyacholim lihimanos laminyan acher bishvil achad shelo hispalel. So if there's someone else now, an 11th person, who's not yet davened, these 10 can go and combine with this one person who hasn't yet davened and form a new minyan. Ve'afilu echad me'osan she's palu kvar yechol lachzor lispalel lehotzi etzachayim. And even one of those 10 who already has davened completely, even though they've fulfilled their obligation, they have nothing left to do, they can actually say it all over again in order to fulfill the obligation of the one person who's not yet davened. Now, I will just quickly say, I don't want to get too deeply into this. This is not actually how we hold in practice nowadays. This question of when can you sort of make another minyan when most of the people haven't davened yet is a more controversial topic. And in general, we only have a minyan for when you have 6 or more people who are actually davening. We talked about this 3 weeks ago with obligation in to pray with a minyan. So please don't take any sort of practical halakhic guidance from this paragraph. What's important for us is the thinking that's going to go into this idea. So we've got this idea now that these other 10 can make a new minyan for this one person who has not yet davened. And even one of those people can actually say out all the prayers for that person. V'somech Rabbeinu Umaret Hanim, minatzibor shibis palalin yudches kol achad le'atzmo. And our teacher, that is to say, Rashi, he supported this position that you can make a new minyan even though you've already davened, from the idea that in general, when we have a congregation, well, what happens in shul normally, right? Normally, in most shuls that have a traditional liturgy, what normally happens is everyone davens the Amidah on their own. And then someone who's already davened the Amidah on their own says it all over again for everyone else. But I actually jumped the gun a bit. And the Chazan, the Shlich Tzibur, repeats it all over again simply to say Kedusha. It turns out that you can make a whole new minyan. You can right. You can, and more important here, the Shliach Tzibur can say the Amida all over again, even though they just said it, in order to say Kedusha. Right. And if I can say the whole thing over again, even though everyone in the room has fulfilled their obligation, but it's just for Kedusha, then certainly, says Rashi, I can participate in a new minyan in order to fulfill the obligation of someone who's not yet davened. And I should also have said the assumption here is that that person does not know how to daven on their own. So that's Rashi's position. If you don't fully understand that, don't worry too much about it. What matters most is what comes next. We're going to get an attack on Rashi and then Rashi's response. So someone got up in the study hall, someone gets up in the base medrash and says to Rashi, hey Rashi, that's not a very good proof. Right? You said I can learn that I can make a second minyan for this person who hasn't davened yet, even though we've all davened already. I can learn that from Kedusha. But that's not a good proof, says this anonymous person in the Beit Midrash, because no one has a Kedusha yet. So I'm not doing it, even though everyone's fulfilled their obligation, because in fact, none of us has yet fulfilled our obligation to Kedusha. And that's why we're doing it. So it's not parallel to the case you actually care about. Right? If that's the case, is this anonymous objector to Rashi, well, then they're still obligated, right? That's why they're saying the Amidah again. It's not just because you can say the Amidah as often as you want, but because there's still all of us in this room still need to hear Kedusha. Beshiv Rabbeinu, Rashi responds, Lo matzinu b'chol ha-Talmud chiyuv Kedusha. You can't find anywhere in the Talmud where it says that Yehudit and Catherine, and I can't see who's below Catherine on my screen, so I'll just use you two as my example for now. You can't find anywhere in the Talmud that Yehudit and Catherine, whoever else is on my screen, that they're obligated to say Kedusha. There's no such thing. Ella, chaviva hilanu Rather, Kedusha is beloved to us, is precious to us. V'eina b'fachos mi'asara. And he doesn't say therefore, but it seems like there's an implied therefore here. And therefore, or not therefore, it requires 10 Jews. It requires a minyan. So what is Rashi saying here? Let's stop the share so we can see your faces a little better. What is Rashi saying? You're not obligated to say Kedusha. You just want to hear Kedusha, right? I don't need to tell someone, you know, who has children, kiss your children because you love them, right? You're not obligated to kiss your children. You want to kiss your children. It's just, you feel that. And so too with God, right? If you are in a relationship with God, you feel this love for God. How can you not want to pretend to be an angel, feeling God's presence and screaming out, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh? That's not an obligation. That's just something we do. It requires 10, but it's not an obligation in any way. So that is Rashi's position. I actually don't know if I would call this an obvious majority position. It's at least a majority position, it's at least a sort of 50-50 position. We'll see the other position in a moment. But it also I haven't just like gone through every source to count up the numbers. Not that that should be our primary way of determining what's right anyway. But this is definitely a common and maybe even dominant position in the medievals that, in fact, Kedusha, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's not something that you have an obligation to say. That's something that we just do say, right? Maybe you could frame it as a communal obligation. Even that Rashi's not saying, but certainly there's no individual obligation in Kadosh Kedusha Baruch Hu. Questions or comments on that first source? I guess it's the second source, the first new source.
So if they're not obligatory, what makes them so special that we do need the minyan for them?
Great. So Rashi doesn't say that. So I'm going to speculate here. But I actually would say, I think that because they're so special, they're not obligatory, right? I don't need to obligate you in that. It's just so obvious. It's just sort of fundamental what it means to be a Jew, is to be in relationship with, I realize, you know, the different kinds of folks in the room, and not everyone's going to agree with what I'm saying, but I believe this, and I think the sources that we're looking at believe this. It's just so fundamental to be in relationship with God that how could you not want to do that? And of course it requires 10, right? We'll see more about the sort of call and response nature of these things. I mean, that also implies a need for some kind of community.
So if we've already established that we're not required to daven in a minyan, but we are required to daven, wouldn't that be understandable that anything you need a minyan for, you're not required for? Wouldn't that be muvan me'elav?
Yeah, so there's definitely overlap between today's topic and the one we did the second week of this class. But we also saw that second week a distinction made between davening with a minyan, which is really what we're talking about Tehillah B'Tzibur, and is that an obligation? Meaning actually saying the words of the Amidah with 9 other adult Jews around versus hearing Kadosh Kedusha and Baruch Hu. And so we can separate them out. I could imagine someone saying, oh, well, sure, everyone's obligated to daven, everyone's obligated to daven with a minyan, or there is no obligation to daven with a minyan, whatever, however you end up on that. But what about Kadosh Kedusha and Baruch Hu? So what we're looking at now is, are these things obligatory? And as we've done with some of the other topics, we'll then look at, what would it mean to fulfill that obligation? And is that obligation going to be gendered in any way? So that's where we're going with this. But you're absolutely right, Rina, to connect this to the topic of the second week. So that was from the Beit Midrash of Rashi. Okay. And now we are looking at Sefer HaMachkim, which is a 13th century French source. So a little bit later than Rashi, 2 centuries later, but the same part of the world and roughly the same time period, at least for halachic purposes. So it says the Sefer HaMachkim, source number 3. Nireh shekol osam kadishim sheomrim katanim lo nizkanu ela lechanachan b'mitzvos. So he says, it seems like all these places where we have minors saying Kaddish, we'll see the Kaddish for this actually a little bit later, but it seems like there were places in the davening where they would have minors leading the Kaddish, not adults. But says the Machkim, well, all of those Kaddishes that we let the minors say, not the other ones, but the ones that we let the minors say, they were only there in order to educate children in mitzvahs. De'i havu chova, heyach motzi nesakal. Because if they were obligatory kaddishim, then how could they ever fulfill the obligations of the community? That person cannot fulfill another's obligation in that thing, right? That general rule that we looked at last week at the beginning. So how can it be that a minor is leading Kaddish? Oh, it must be that those are extra Kaddishes, right? You have this idea of extra Kaddishes in a number of places. For example, you know, there's a big divide between Ashkenazim and Sephardim in terms of how many Kaddishes we have in our respective davenings. And some of that has to do with the fact that most communities in America don't follow this anymore, but there historically were, and there still are some, many, and there still are some communities that don't let multiple mourners say Kaddish at the same time. Rather, only one person may say Kaddish at a time. In such communities, they will often add things to say in order to add extra condition, right? So instead of just doing one Kaddish at the end, they'll say Kaddish after Aleinu and or the Psalm per day. And maybe they'll add some Torah learning after that, get another Kaddish in. And that makes sense in the community where the practice is not to have multiple mourners saying Kaddish all at once, only one person says at a time. So we make as many Kaddishim in as possible in order to give more people a chance to say Kaddish if they're mourners. Now, are you telling me that these Kaddishes that we're adding in that I don't really need to say that they're obligatory in some way? No. So Sefer Machim is saying, don't think that all Kaddishes are equal. Not all Kaddishes are equal. And you're right, some of them kids can say, but that's not to say that any Kaddish a kid can say, right? There are some that he thinks are obligatory. And so if Rashi thinks, and I should be, to be very clear, Rashi and the Machim are talking about two different things. Rashi's talking about Kedusha, and the Machim is talking about Kaddish. But fundamentally, we're going to see these things are all in a group, and likely the same rules apply to all of them. So if we had Rashi saying Kedusha is not an obligation, it's just something you want to do, it's something you need to do as a Jew, need to do it, not halakhically, need to do from your kishkas, from your soul. Well, the Machim goes the other way. No, it's like, no, in fact, some of these things are in fact obligations. Now, does that mean that therefore women may not lead those things? No, because no one has said that these things are gendered in their obligation. All we said is that according to Sefer HaMachim, there is an obligation, right? For Rashi, it can't possibly be gendered because there's not an obligation. For the Machim, there's an obligation. So maybe, as we'll have to talk about, it could be gendered. But we don't see any claim that it is. Okay, so now we'll get a little more context for where that Machim was coming from. The Beit Yosef, whom we've seen before, Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, the work that he wrote before his Shulchan Aruch in order to sort of bring together all the different opinions on all the various halachic topics that basically matter for contemporary Jewish life. And what does he say? Source number four. Based on what the tour is the work on which the Beit Yosef is commenting, and other things I brought previously, which I, Michael, am not citing for you, but which the Beis Yosef did cite, Mashma Behedya, Shekatan, Eino Rashai, Leired, Bifnei Teva. Based on everything that the Beis Yosef has just brought, which I did not bring, it would seem like a minor is not allowed to lead davening, right? This might be something that you take for granted because you're living in a post-Shulchan Aruch world. And if I imagine most of you are living in an Ashkenazi world or certainly a non-Yemenite world. So the Beis Yosef, but it's not obvious, right? The Beis Yosef says, it looks like a minor should not lead davening, afilu be'akrai ba'alma, even once in a while, right? And here's, we talked about this last week. There's this discussion about whether an adult Jew, but one who's not yet fully grown, let's say a 16-year-old, can lead davening as a chazan, but they certainly should be able to lead in a once in a while way. But says the Beis Yosef, a minor, an 11-year-old, certainly may not lead davening even once off. They actually lead ma'a. And therefore, it's shocking to me that they're having minors leading davening on Saturday night. Right? And maybe, says the Beis Yosef, you could be lenient, right? He doesn't love this practice, as we'll see. Right, the practice is that there are communities that are davka choosing a minor, an 11-year-old, let's say, to lead Marav on Saturday night, and the Beis Yosef says, "I look, this seems like it's crazy. It's shocking. Yeshli Tmoa. It's shocking, but I suppose you could justify it by saying, you know what, a minor should not lead Shacharis or Mincha. Because what do you have at Shacharis and Mincha? You have the repetition of the Amidah, which includes in it Kedusha. You can't say Kedusha without repeating the Amidah. So there, a minor for sure can't do it." But I should have read more. The katan came on the law bar chiyuvahu, ena motziyam kedetznam kol she'enem b'chiyuv b'davar ena motziyas rabim yidei chovasan. And a minor, since they're not obligated in the Amidah, they can't say the Amidah out loud to fulfill others' obligations in it, and the kedusha that's contained in it, they can't say. right? So Shach LeMincha, you got to be strict. But at Maariv, where there's no repetition of the Amida, right? That maybe a minor could do. Now, he doesn't say out the rest, but let's note, what do you have at Maariv? You do have Baruch Hu, and you do have Kedusha. Not Kedusha, sorry. You have Baruch Hu, and you do have Kaddish. And if you have Baruch Hu and Kaddish, and the Beis Yosef, granted, he doesn't like this. But he's saying, it seems like, yeah, you can defend it, because there's not the Amida in which minors aren't obligated. Well, if he thought that Kaddish and Baruch were things that someone was obligated in, he couldn't defend a minor doing this on Saturday night by that same logic. So he must believe, like Rashi, that these are things that fundamentally do not have an obligation, and therefore a minor can do them. Does he like it? No. But is it justifiable? So he seems to think. So I've heard that the Avudraham, a very important medieval commentator with regard to prayer in particular, I've heard that he criticized this practice of letting minors lead on Saturday nights. And another rabbi he cites who also thought we should stop this practice of minors leading davening on Saturday nights. But I found in the Rashba, who gives the name of the Ravid, another very important medieval, what does the Ravid say? The reason why the Mishnah says a minor may not lead davening, why is that? I apologize in advance. This is not great writing on the Ravid's part, right? So it's out of order. Why does the Mishnah say that a minor may not be davening? Well, he begins by saying, why do you think they could, right? Which is that davening, according to this view, this is actually a debate. We talked about this the first week. But according to this view, davening is a rabbinic commandment. No one is obligated to pray mid-oraita, right, at a biblical level. And if that's the case, well, then a minor who's obligated in everything rabbinically because of chinuch, because of education, well, then they're obligated rabbinically. And I, as an adult, I'm also obligated rabbinically. So the minor can fulfill my obligation. That's what you might have thought, says the Ravid. Remember, we're trying to explain why a minor may not do this, but that's why you might have thought they would. So therefore, the Mishnah, Kamashvalan, the Mishum Kvodat Sibor Lo of Dinan, Denayu Litzibor Shakatan Motzian, Adkan Lashono. So the Mishnah, therefore, comes to teach us that because of this phrase that we know very well after last week, Kvod HaTzibor, the community's honor, that's why we don't let a minor lead davening. In other words, it has nothing to do with is a minor obligated or not. That's not the issue, according to the Rashba, according to the Ravid. But rather, even if everyone is on an equal level of obligation, this just does not look right, right? I would not send a 10-year-old to represent me in Congress. I would not send a 10-year-old to be my representative before the sovereign. So how would I possibly send a 10-year-old to be my representative before God? And based on this reasoning, well, then you can justify the practice of minors leading davening on Saturday night. Because what can you say, as we said last week regarding Torah reading? They waived their honor. They're not offended by this. And of course, here we go back to the debate we saw last week between the Beis Yosef on the one side and the Bach. The Beis Yosef here is saying exactly what we saw him saying last week. Yeah, a community can choose to waive their honor and do something that otherwise might be offensive to them. The Bach, what would he say here? He would say, no, you can't do that. This is not a good reason to justify a minor leading davening. The afil alamai de perash Rashi, the time of the matnis and mishum de kol sheinu chuyu b'davar einu mosiyas of rabbi de shavaso. Ika lameir de shavaso arvis shani de reshusi. Right, and Maariv is a different category because Maariv in general is optional. If that last part, you know, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go too deeply into that last paragraph. It's going to take us too far afield. But fundamentally, what's important to understand is that Beis Yosef is saying, I don't love the practice, right? And it makes sense, because I don't think any of us would love the practice of saying, like, well, maybe we might disagree about the value of pedagogy and communal honor. So maybe I shouldn't say we all agree. But we all understand how it might not look so good to have a 10-year-old leading us in prayer, right? So now we think about what does this mean for our topic, for thinking about halakhic arguments around davening and gender. Well, unlike a minor who is only obligated because of chinuch, because of education, well, we know a woman is fully obligated in prayer, just like a man. There's no difference between folks of different genders with regard to obligation in prayer. And all that leaves then is the question. So first of all, it's not the same. It's actually a stronger argument for women leading than for minors. And what that leaves us with is, what are we going to say about kvod tzibur? Are you going to say, well, yes, I see that it's offensive to have women lead for your community? Or, let me take a step back. Are you going to say, that is an offensive thing, but we can choose to waive our honor following the Beis Yosef? Or are you going to say, yeah, it's an offensive thing, but we think you could waive your, that you think you can't waive your honor like the Bach? Or are you going to say, actually, in our current cultural moment, that is not in fact an offensive thing. That is not actually a degradation of the community. So I think it's clear to you all by now where I stand on these issues. But I do think that's sort of the framing one has to have. I think one can come to different sort of conclusions around this based on the Beis Yosef for now. But one has to be aware of what it is that you're saying when you're saying, you know, folks of different genders may or may not lead davening. And just see how this gets played out in the Shulchan Aruch, in his actual code of law. He says here, yesh lilmod zechus al mekamos shenoagin shekhtanim yordin lefnei ha-teva lispalel filas arvis b'mozei shabbasos. One can justify the practice of minors leading on Saturday night. So clearly, the Beis Yosef, as I said multiple times, does not love this. But is it halakhically justifiable? Yes. Why does he not love it? Presumably because he thinks, as he wrote in this Beis Yosef, that this is not honorable, right? Okay, you can waive your honor, but should you? And the Rama adds here, Ubim makmoshalo naguken, ein la katan lavor lefei ha-teva, afilu betilas arvis. The Rama adds, in places where it's not already the custom to have this, then don't start, right? If it's your custom to have a minor leading on Saturday night, fine, go right ahead. But if you're not doing this, don't read this passage of Shulchan Aruch and be like, oh, great, my 10-year-old can now lead davening on Saturday night. Don't do that. Which you can imagine someone saying, well, look, in a world where you're not yet an egalitarian community, you shouldn't start something new like this. I can imagine someone using this Rama to make that argument. But what I would say back to that person is, okay, but that's assuming that you think there's actually a kvod tzibur violation in someone leading just because of their gender, right? And this goes back to the two sources that we ended with last week, where either you might say, well, I don't think that's offensive anymore, or in a stronger way, actually, I think it's more offensive to leave people out, right? But this is these halakhic stories help us get to a place where we have to be honest about, well, what is it we're saying when we're either saying that folks should be able to lead irrespective of gender, or they should not be able to lead? So the Magen Avraham, a major commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, says, regarding this thing that we just saw, that a minor may lead on Saturday night, even though the Shulchan Aruch doesn't love it. Exactly what we've been saying. A minor, why are they allowed? Because there's no repetition of the Amidah, right? Why may they not repeat the Amidah? Because they're not equally obligated in the Amidah. But Kashin Baruch Hu, that's fine. Well, guess who is obligated in the Amidah? And should also be fine for Kashin Baruch Hu, folks of different genders, women in particular. All right, so that's the Magen Avraham. And then we'll look at the Shulchan Aruch Harav, and then we'll take a pause. Shulchan Aruch Harav is a sort of reworking of the Shulchan Aruch by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, who, in addition to being a Hasidic Rebbe, was also a significant halakhic figure. Within the Chabad world, this work has actually replaced the Shulchan Aruch as the definitive work of halakha. But even outside of Chabad, this is a very important halakhic work, even for folks who are not Hasidic or Chabad. So what does the Shulchan Aruch Harav say? Yesh lelamed zechus al mekamos shenoagin. So it begins just like the Shulchan Aruch. You can justify it. You can justify this practice of minors leaving because they're not fulfilling anyone's obligation. Right? Just like the Magen Avraham said, they're not repeating the Amidah. They're just saying Baruch Hu and Kaddish. Right, and in a place where you don't already have this custom, now this is the Rama, don't start it. And why? Why should you not start it? Mishum Baruch Hu Shiva, because of the Baruch Hu in Marav. The Ein Baruch Hu Shel Tefilas Shachris Va'Arvis, Dome Le Baruch Hu Shel Kriyas HaTorah, Shekaden Yechol Omra, Lefi She'ena Chova Kol Kach. And this paragraph is a highlighted paragraph right now. This is actually the crucial part of the Shulchan Aruch Harav. We saw Rashi and Sefer HaMachkim before the medieval period. Rashi saying there's no obligation in Kedusha. And Machkim saying, Well, there are different kinds of kaddishes, and some of them are more obligatory. And here the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, unlike the Shulchan Aruch, following more the position of the Sefer HaMachkim, comes along and says, well, actually, you know, why is it ideal not to have a minor lead marav also? Because there's Baruch Hu there, right? And yes, we know that a minor can take an aliyah, and taking an aliyah requires saying Baruch Hu. So it would seem like a minor is allowed to say Baruch Hu, but says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, no, in fact. The obligation of Baruch Hu in the Kriya Satara, it's a different kind of Baruch Hu. It's not as severe, it's not as real an obligation as the obligation of Baruch Hu in the morning and evening prayers, in Shacharis and Maariv. And so therefore, that's the Shulchan Aruch HaRav's explanation for why we don't really like this. Right? He could have gone the quoted Tzibor route, and he doesn't. So we have essentially here two routes. One that is sort of Rashi, the Shulchan Aruch, which fundamentally says, these things are not obligations, right? That's not the issue. That's the wrong way to think about this. And if that's the world you're in, well, then these are not going to be relevant factors in determining who can lead davening. And the other route we have is Sefer HaMachim and Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who do seem to think that, in fact, yes, there is some kind of individual obligation for David and Yehudit and Rina and anyone else who's on my screen that I'm not seeing right now to say and or hear Kedusha and Kaddish and Baruch Hu. There is some sort of obligation in that. And therefore, it is at best not great, and maybe even forbidden for a minor to lead. And we then have to ask ourselves, well, how do we think that should map on to the question of gender? Are we going to say, well, minors are a marginalized group in the same way that, historically at least, women are a marginalized group, and exclude them from that? That'd be the sort of Shulchan Aruch HaRav position, potentially. Actually, I shouldn't even say that, because we don't even know what Shulchan Aruch HaRav would say about women, right? Again, it's actually really, it's an important mistake I almost just made there, right? For all we know, Shulchan Aruch HaRav would say, yeah, but Baruch Hu, women are also obligated. He doesn't address the gender piece. But at least plausibly, you could sort of see the Shulchan Aruch HaRav as excluding at least some kinds of folks. Or the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which said, no, actually, in fact, this is not the right way to talk about it. All right, let's pause here for questions and comments.
So I'm not aware of the Lucky Foundation, but in Spanish and Portuguese minhag and in Italian minhag, imloch, the line imloch, until the end of Kedusha, is usually sung by a child, but not by a woman. Any reason why the two categories be split at a certain point?
Sorry, just to make sure I'm understanding, Andreas. So you're saying that in Kedusha during the Amida,
and from imloch until the end is a child who lead it, right?
Really?
The paragraph for sure. I don't know what it gets till the Hatimah, till the Baruch. But certainly in the Spanish and Portuguese, in Jerusalem, for example, and in Italian synagogue, strong Spanish and Portuguese background, I've seen with my eyes, but children, but not women. So a certain part of the two categories have been split. Yeah. This is my speculation.
Yeah. So well, I would not assume that the fact that a minor does that, first of all, I will say I don't know about that practice. So I'm spitballing here. And I have a student here at Hadar who used to daven regularly in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue here in New York. So I'm going to go right after this and ask him what he knows about that. And hopefully I'll get back to you next week with anything he might know about that. But I would not assume that the fact that that happens, that a minor leads that and women don't, I would not assume that reflects a halakhic split at some point. I would assume that it reflects the sort of And I don't mean this critically. I do mean this critically, but I also mean it sympathetically, the historical tendency to say, well, boys are going to become men, so they're more included, right? And so sort of, I suspect that reflects like never having thought about, well, what about if a woman wanted to lead this part? I don't suspect it actually reflects any halakhic thinking about a difference in obligation or difference in anything like that. That's my instinct, but again, it's the first time I'm hearing that practice, so I'm gonna check with our student and see if he knows anything about that.
So my question is, we see all these study commentaries on whether a child can lead. Do we have anything specific that relates to gender, to women doing any of this?
We will get to some more recent sources that relate specifically to gender. And we saw last week with Torah reading, we had some medieval sources also that related to gender. But for leading davening, as far as I recall, all of the medieval sources focus on the age axis, which for our purposes, A, we should note, is like, it's hurtful, right? It's offensive, it's hurtful to think that like the way we're going to think through halakhically what women may or may not do is based on stories about what children may or may not do. That should hurt us and should offend us. But it also means that any source we're seeing that is permissive is going to be all the more so permissive for women who have a stronger obligation. And any source that is dismissive of minors' ability to do certain things, we have to take with a heavy grain of salt, because maybe that only applies because of the minor's lesser obligation. So you're absolutely right to ask about that, Randy. We will see some 19th and 20th century sources that get into this. Oh, no, we'll see actually one 18th century source as well. But I don't know anything from the medieval period that deals with gender and leading. Gender and Torah reading we saw last week.
This is a really minor point, but I'm wondering why specifically we're talking about Ma'ariv on Motzei Shabbos as opposed to any other Ma'ariv.
Yeah, I think just because Ma'aseh Shehaya Kach Haya, right? Like, there was this practice, maybe because, you know, it's a time when you're not as much of a rush, and so if like you have a kid leading and taking a long time, or I'm not sure exactly what that would be, but you can sort of imagine it's a special time, and maybe it's a good time to get the Hebrew school class, you know, practice leading davening or something like that. I imagine that's the case, but I don't think there's anything halakhically significant to it. It's not like it's of lesser value than a Thursday night Ma'ariv.
So I'm trying to follow the logic here, and I'm thinking about, so l'shem chinuch, children, minors are able to lead. So I would assume that the whole kvodat tzibur, I'm going under the assumption that it has to do with competency, and you want to make sure that whoever's leading the tzibur is someone who's competency, and children are not there yet, or minors not there yet, but in order to get them there, this allowance is sometimes made. So I'm wondering with women, if we're trying to find a parallel, you know, there are many who don't believe that women can learn, are allowed to learn, and that l'shem chinuch, I don't know how we can, I know that that could apply to women if the end game is not the same. And the other thing, just as an aside, is it's interesting to me because the whole concept that tefillat ma'ariv is not as important, what I know of from modern Orthodox settings that I've been in is that many women do not daven ma'ariv at all. So the concept that that would be a beginning point that they might be allowed to lead is interesting to me.
Yeah. So on the last one, I'll quickly say, I mentioned this orally in our first class. You have the source on the source sheet, but we didn't look at it inside because we were running out of time. The Mishnah Berurah, when trying to make sense halakhically of the obligation to daven for individuals, he's like, look, I can't really justify the Magen Avraham's leniency for women not to daven. It doesn't really make sense when the majority of authorities go the other way, but we can be lenient on Ma'ariv, right? Since Ma'ariv is optional for everyone officially, and it's only obligatory because we say that the Jews have accepted on ourselves the obligation to daven Ma'ariv, therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, well, maybe the women never accepted it on themselves. And so the practice of women not davening Ma'ariv is primarily in non-Hasidic Haredi communities, although I guess it's somewhat common in modern Orthodoxy as well. The, you know, the practice of daven shachar and mincha carefully, I was going to say religiously, but meaning punctiliously, but not to daven Ma'ariv consistently. So that's where that comes from. And in terms of the broader point, Rina, I think, it's, you know, this is the question, right? It's like, are we reading these sources just trying to like find the things that will allow us to justify what we want already justify? Or are we looking at these sources with fresh eyes to say, well, what is the sort of ideal for Jews, right? And when are those ideals gendered? When should they be gendered? When are they not gendered? And so it is true that I think many, in many communities, they default to the position that, well, an 11-year-old boy, even though he's less obligated than a 40-year-old woman, he's different because he's going to come to be fully obligated in this thing that we're talking about. Well, I mean, first of all, in most of the cases we're talking about, the woman is already fully obligated. So it's not even about chinuch, right? But that idea that like that's the sort of benefit to think about the minor over the woman, I think that sort of, it begs the question, right? Sort of assuming that which we're already trying to figure out. So I would sort of reframe it in that way.
I had the same question about why it specified Ma'ariv at the end of Shabbos. And I was contrasting that text to the text about the 10 guys who have already davened Shachris. And it seems to me like there is some loose qualitative assessment of what the exact rules are based on what is or is not appropriate, based perhaps on some correlation of which communal davening opportunities are more or less likely to have a lot of people at them. I think about Ma'ariv at the end of Shabbos is like, well, of course, let's let a kid lead because not that many people are necessarily going to trudge back, as opposed to Shacharis when, oh, look, we already davened, we're already here, we'll do it again. It seems like the assessment across the issue, as with other sources we've looked at, seems to contemplate the realities of life, the realities of people showing up, And so that was one question. The other thing I was wondering about was the mechanism you mentioned wherein a community could collectively decide to be dishonored or whatever. Like what a silly term in the context of this class, but I was curious if that is actually a process and procedure that groups of people can participate in actively.
Yeah. So with regard to the second question, we don't see a sort of description of, well, what would it mean for a tzibur to be mochel their kavod, right? What if you have 100 members of your congregation and 99 say, we're fine with a minor leading Saturday night Maariv, and one person is like, well, I'm going to leave the congregation if you do this, right? As, you know, actually, I say a little bit tongue-in-cheek, right? But actually has happened in certain communities when they've made changes in their practices around inclusion. So we don't have that. I think, you know, practically speaking, it's going to end up being, you know, not quite majority rule. I think most congregations aren't going to change their practice if they're at 50 plus epsilon percent of people in support of something. But at a certain point, you do have a sense of like, oh yeah, this community, we're not bothered by that. And if anything, you know, to be explicit, we have a gender, the community that I'm a part of, for the most part, are even the communities I'm a part of that are non-egalitarian, all agree that, not all agree, but there's a strong sense of the communities I'm a part of, even some of the ones that are not egalitarian, there's a sense that like, we're progressive people, feminist people, and this idea that women are excluded, it actually bothers us, it actually offends us more. So I think much of the time is just sort of, you know, you have a sense of where the community is, but I don't know of any sort of explicit discussion of, you know, what percentage has to vote to be mochel, their kavod, to waive their honor. And with regard to this first thing you said, I think it's definitely plausible. Like, it's hard to know, right? We can't make assumptions based on our experience. Like, if in your shul, Saturday night is not the most vibrant time at synagogue, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's true in, you know, 13th century Spain or 18th century Budapest, whatever it may be. So I think it's plausible, but I just don't think we have enough information to know. Okay, let's jump in back to the sources. And so we've talked about, is there an obligation to daven? Is there an obligation for Kaddish Kedusha and Baruch Hu? Source number 8, which for the sake of time, we won't do inside. We're now shifting to the question of, well, what would it even mean to fulfill an obligation in Kaddish, Kedusha, or Baruch Hu? Right? We have to notice that these things are fundamentally different from the other things we normally talk about as examples of fulfilling someone else's obligation. So for example, if I leave it quite aside the question of gender, right? If I want to fulfill my obligation in shofar and Rina blows shofar and I hear it, well, I've heard the shofar blow, right? Even though I didn't personally do it, I didn't make it sound, but I heard it. Someone made it sound, I heard it. That's valid, right? I want to drink some wine and Rina makes a Borei Priya Geffen over her wine and I say amen while holding my wine. I fulfilled my obligation to bless before food in that case. But that's not what happens with, for example, Kedusha, right? With Kedusha, I'm either saying everything that the Chazan is saying, depending on your custom, there are different practices around this, or I'm saying things that the Chazan is not saying, right? Or that I'm not hearing the Chazan say, right? So the Chazan will say in Nusach Ashkenaz, which I imagine is what most of us in the room are familiar with, Nekadesh Eshimcha, and the congregation says Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And maybe the Chazan says that afterwards, maybe say it with the congregation, maybe they don't say it. But there's a sort of back and forth, right? It's not a normal example of, you know, Hannah does something and I hear it and I thereby fulfill my obligation. So the Shul and Leket here is saying that these things, Kedusha, Kasha, and Baruch Hu, which he does seem to think are things that you actually have an obligation in, but they're different from other kinds of obligations, right? Because other obligations, I don't just say it. I hear Rina say Borei Priya Geffen, I say Amen, or truth be told, even if I don't say Amen, but I heard every word of Rina, that's good enough. But Kedusha, no, I've got to say it myself. It's not enough to hear someone else say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. I've got to say it. So that's already showing us that these things are in a different kind of category from the usual examples of fulfilling others' obligations. And we're going to see that even more clearly in a 20th century text, Mishpatei Uziel. This is Rav, blanking on his last name now, but the first, I think, chief Sephardi rabbi of Free State Israel. And what does he say? Oh, and the context here is he's talking about a school where you have enough adult teachers at Minyan that you actually have a Minyan, right? So there's no question about, is there a Minyan in the room or not? But they want the kids to lead davening as an educational thing, right? They want the kids to as a practice leading. So the question is, can the adults, you know, answer these Dvarim Shebik Dusha that the kids are saying? So Mishpat Uziel says like this, Va'al Tishiveni Miditznan. Don't respond to what I just said based on the following. Nashim Va'avadim U'Ketanim Chayevim B'Tfila U'Mezuzah Ha'lamad Shektanim Chayevim B'Tfila U'Bichlal Tfila U'Gam Kedushas Hashem. Don't say to me, well, wait a minute, I know that a minor is obligated to davening. We saw that in week one. And Kedusha, even though it's very beautiful and very fancy, we need a minion for it. What is Kedusha? It's just an expanded version of the third blessing of the Amidah. So if you're obligated in the Amidah, then presumably you're obligated in Kedusha. So this is all what Rav Uziel wants you not to say to him. But this is the sort of response someone might say, look, a kid is obligated in davening. Therefore, they're equally obligated in Kedusha. And if that's the case, then a minor can get up in a minyan of valid Jewish adults and fulfill their obligation in all of the davening, including the Kedusha. Says Rav Uziel, Ein Zo Tshuva. That's not a good response. Sharei Perish Rashi, because Rashi has explained, the Tfila Rach Midrabanan, right? This is going back to week one. Why are minors and women obligated in davening? Because it is rabbinic. It is about love and mercy. And the rabbis can decree however they want to decree. V'tignuha af l'nashim v'lachnoch katanim. And they establish it, I'm going to say even here, even though I think it's an offensive even for women and for the education of minors. And now, I think I may have alluded to this when we looked at that Rashi the first week, but if I didn't, now we're going to see it explicitly. Dok v'tishkach, examine Rashi's words carefully, and what do you find? The obligation for minors is not a pure obligation. It's an obligation to get educated about davening. It's not an obligation to daven. Unlike nashim, right? What does Rashi say? It is the rabbis decreed it for women and for the education of minors. That's not the same thing. And he says explicitly, the obligation of minors is not the same as the obligation of women, who are equal to men in obligation and davening. So we saw someone a couple sources ago say, oh, well, look, minors are obligated because they're because of education. Everyone else is only obligated rabbinically, so they're on the same level. Says Rav Uziel, no. They're not on the same level. They might both be technically rabbinic obligations, that is, they're obligations that don't come from the Torah itself, but from the rabbi's additions to the Torah. That's true. But an obligation in chinuch, in education, is fundamentally subsidiary to an obligation that is pure and of itself, right? So you can't tell me that a minor can fulfill my obligation in davening and kedusha because they're obligated in davening, because they're not really obligated in the same ways as Rav Uziel. So at this point, he would seem to be saying that a minor cannot lead davening for a minion of adults, even though there's an argument one might make that's a bad argument. Notice his argument actually seems to imply that a woman should be able to lead davening. Going on. Right? But I actually think this is a good practice that the school has of having the minors lead davening, because it educates them in how to lead. And I can justify it. How? When the Mishnah says that only someone who's obligated in something can fulfill others' obligation in that thing, that's only true when you fulfill the obligation, when the second person, the one who's doing it by means of the first, fulfills their obligation by hearing. Rina blows shofar, I hear it. Jacob says, break your geffen over a glass of wine, I hear it. In that case, if Jacob is not about to drink a glass of wine himself, I can't fulfill my obligation through his saying it, because he's not obligated to say it. If Rina, for some reason, is not obligated to blow shofar, I don't get to fulfill my shofar obligation through her. But, and he actually says, can go into shofar and mikra megillah, like how we do shofar and megillah. And like lots of other things where you fulfill your obligation by hearing someone else say the thing. Right? And all these things, the person hearing doesn't say it, they just have intention to fulfill their obligation by what the other person is doing. Aval. But in a situation where the people hearing it say word for word what the person leading says. V'akora eido ela makri lifnei hemadvarim. And the person leading is not saying it for the community, but rather is prompting for the community. In that case, you fulfill your obligation by what you yourself actually say. And the person leading is just like a conductor, right? They're just letting us know, okay, I've started the next bracha. And then I mumble for a while, and then I say the end of the bracha. And I know, and then you know, okay, now we finished that bracha. Right? It's nice to know the pace at which the chazan is saying. Saying the davening, and that's all we're really doing. The chen b'kedusha is Hashem, and so too with kedusha. Hoseach divrei kedusha, right? What does the chazan do? They begin by saying nekadesh hashim chav olam, right? Again, a nusach Ashkenaz, whatever your nusach is. V'akal onim acharav shakir, v'akal onim acharav, and then we say after the chazan nekadesh, and then depending on the practice, but we all say kadosh kadosh kadosh. We all say all the things. In that case. In such a case, the person leading can certainly be a minor or, and of course, for him, it's equivalent, but even actually for him, it's not equivalent. He sort of slips here, makes it sound equivalent, but actually, as he's already implied, it's actually stronger, right? A minor, and all the more so, I would add, a woman. From here, we learn that if the adults in the room are going to say all the words of davening themselves, including the words of kedusha, which is what you normally do anyway, and they fulfill their obligations based on what they said. So based on how we do it nowadays, which is, this is what we do, right? We don't go to shul and let the shliach tzibur say the bracha before shema out loud, and we sit there and listen and then say amen. That's not how we do it, right? We all say the brachas of shema. We all say the amida. That's always been true. We all say the words of Kedusha. They fulfill their obligation by what they say. Therefore, even a minor may lead. Now, I will say there's a very important ellipsis here, which is that the Mishpat Uziel backs off. He's like, but actually, it doesn't really look so good. So I'm not sure I'm actually endorsing this. So in terms of the practical psak, I'm not saying that Mishpat Uziel is actually saying this is okay. But what's important for us is his logic and reasoning, which he does not back away from, which is that the way we do davening nowadays, there isn't even a question of obligation, right? Even if you are obligated in Kedusha and Kaddish and Baruch Hu, well, no one's saying that for you, right? You say the words. You say Yehei Shmei Rava. I know we're at 1 minute left to go, but we must do this last source together. We don't need to do source number 11 together. This last source is a very important source about Kaddish. I'll paraphrase it for the sake of time, but I encourage you to read it on your own. And the question here is, a man died without sons, and he wants his daughter to say Kaddish for him. So he hires, in his will, 10 men to come learn in his house, learn Torah in his house. And at the end of their learning, the daughter will say Kaddish. And this happens in Amsterdam, and the Chavos Yair is asked about it. He says, you know, it's a well-known famous thing, he says. And he says, actually, there's really no technical reason why this should be a problem, right? There's no evidence to contradict them in this matter, right? He explains based on things we've seen already. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to say this doesn't work. Nonetheless, we should worry that such an act, Jewish customs, which are also Torah, will be weakened, right? What's he worried about? That this will lead to a change in Jewish practice. Now, I'm going to stop here for a moment and say, first of all, what's important about that Chavos Yair, which I apologize we ran out of time to see inside, but I encourage you to look at it on your own. First of all, on sort of technical, formal grounds, what are you saying? Yeah, there's no reason why a woman can't say Kaddish, right? This makes sense in terms of what we know about obligations and gender. There's no reason to think that Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu are things that a woman would not be able to lead for the community. That's the first thing he says. The second thing he says is that, but I don't like it because once you start changing things, well, who knows what else is going to change? And I actually don't want to dismiss that. I think it's actually a powerful argument. And in many ways, the source that we're not even going to look at, source number 11 from Rav Henkin of Blessed Memory, actually says exactly that. Like, even if he's talking about mixed Torah reading, even if you think mixed Torah reading is halakhically fine, I don't think that's going to stay from community very long. And personally, again, speaking for myself, not for any of you, not for Hadar, speaking for myself, I really respect that argument. I don't agree with it, right? I think the sort of gender, the ethical concerns of feminism override that argument. But I do think we have to be worried about, well, what changes that we're making that we think are right, what might they lead to changes that we think are problematic? But also we have to realize that not changing things can often be its own kind of problem. And here it's really important to know that there was an oral tradition of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, a very important 20th century American rabbi, who based on this Chavos Yair, source number 10, which we did not see inside, which I just paraphrased, based on that source, he actually permitted women to say Kaddish in Shul. If anyone has ever been a woman who said Kaddish in an Orthodox synagogue, you probably have Rav Aaron Soloveitchik to thank for it. He was really the one who made that an acceptable position in at least some Orthodox synagogues. And what does he say? The Chavos Yair says, we can't let women do this because it's going to lead to a weakening of Torah. Rav Aaron said that was true in his time. But in 20th century America, if you, the rabbi of the shul, don't let women in your synagogue say Kaddish, what's going to happen? They're going to go to some non-Orthodox shul where they're going to cease to be frul. Now, different people in this room can have different attitudes towards Orthodoxy and denominationalism. That is not our topic here. But from his point of view, saying we're not going to be egalitarian in this one regard with regard to Kaddish was actually a threat to Torah because it will drive people away. And given that there's no formal argument, why not? And in fact, we absolutely should have an egalitarian practice with regard to mourners' Kaddish. And logically, that there's no reason that wouldn't apply to all these other things we're talking about, Kedusha, Kaddish, and Baruch Hu. So where do we end up? Like we've seen for a lot of the last couple of weeks, we have this idea that there's no reason to think that these things, Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu, are, no, that's too strong. There is a good reason to think that these things are not an obligation. To the extent they are an obligation, we don't see anyone saying that they are gendered. And to the contrary, we often see folks saying in passing, not ever as their topic, but in passing, in fact, this would seem not to be a gendered area, right? The Chavos Yair explicitly saying, yeah, women have the same obligation in Kaddish as men. We've come back to our notion of Kodesh Tzibur, that there are things that might be problematic for the honor of a community. And we can understand that instinctively with regard to minors. And then we have to ask ourselves, well, what does that mean for our communities in terms of gender? Is gender egalitarianism a disgrace that we're willing to tolerate for our ethics? Is it not a disgrace? Is it the opposite of disgrace? Is it something that exclusion of women is, in fact, the offensive thing, as we saw Rev Wald saying last week?